Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome, everybody, to the Tap Three Times Radio Show. This is Dan Meadows coming to you live from Western North Carolina, over here in the mountains near the Blue Ridge Parkway. I want to welcome everyone here this evening and just let you know that the Tap Three Times Radio Show comes to you pretty much almost each and every week. Now, last week, we were out of town. We had what we were doing was a pistol, rifle, and shotgun class. We weren't able to get back in on time, and so we postponed that particular one, put it off until next week, which is going to be about women shooters, new shooters, and we'll pick up on that particular broadcast next week. We have some special guests for that particular show as well. We do want to welcome you to tonight's show. Tonight's show is going to be about 911. I just shot someone. Before we get into the show, I do want to talk and mention about some of our friends and listeners who are either on with us live tonight or those who will be listening on a podcast. I want to let you know that whatever difficulties, health-related difficulties or concerns that you have in your life on a personal and daily basis, I want to let you know we are thinking about you here at Tap Three Times Radio Show. And, you know, I talk with many of you each week or get on to the social media with you, and I kind of know what's going on with you, and I just want to send blessings over your ways, prayers over your way, healing prayers over your ways for the ones who are affected by some kind of health concerns. We also want to think about our friends who are in these recent hurricane zones, the disaster-related zones that are out there. We have people over in Texas and Louisiana still suffering from the hurricanes that went through there. Of course, then we had Hurricane Irma here not long ago, and Maria that's came through. That's really done some devastation. So our friends down in Florida, Puerto Rico, and whatever other affected areas, just want to let you know we're thinking about you as well. I hope everything goes quickly for you and that you're able to get some sort of your life back together soon and that you get back on your feet really soon as well. God bless you all. I do want to take a moment to remember our heroes, our military, law enforcement, our first responders who are out there, also with the corrections officers, security, and others, people who go in harm's way each and every day. You are also in our thoughts. But at this time, I do want to take just a moment of silence for our fallen veterans and first responders who are out there, who make a difference in our life, and you've paid the ultimate sacrifice with yours. Godspeed, and our prayers are with you. And of course, your families as well. So, a moment of silence. Okay, and we are back to you. Again, this is Dan Meadows. I am the CEO, consultant, and chief instructor of the Tap Three Times Group of Companies, also with the Tango 3 Global Group. I do just a number of things with the Tap Three Times Group. We do firearms, archery, survival, tactical training, a lot of different kind of pistol, rifle, and shotgun type trainings as well. We do concealed carry. Tango 3 Global, we do a lot of international business services. We do real world security. We do threat assessments and security audits and church security training, just a number of different things. And of course, we had an incident with that just this past week in one of the churches here recently. So we are going to have an upcoming show going on about that. But tonight's show is going to be on 911. I just shot someone. And what that basically is about, back in October 2013, I wrote an article, and I primarily wrote it that it was posted on the Shooting Channel. It was on the Shooting Channel radio show. We talked about it. My mentor over there, Michelle Rahal, and I discussed a number of different scenarios and situations and just a lot of things that has to do with the events of a defensive gun usage encounter and, defensive shooting events along that lines. Well, I wrote it for the Shooting Channel radio show. Our dear friends over at the Daily Caller picked it up, and they posted it, and I think they reposted it and reposted it and reposted it, and I really do appreciate them doing all that for us over there. So, anytime you put it out, it's a great thing. There's been law enforcement agencies, there's been a number of attorney groups, law offices who have used this particular article that I wrote, 911, I Just Shot Someone, by Dan Meadows. If you research it, if you go online, you'll be able to pull it up and you'll be able to read the article and you can download, print it out. We're going to talk about many of those this evening. I'm not sure we're going to get to all of them. Try not to keep it from a two-part show, but if it goes into that, then so be it. But I do want to read this to you. It's kind of on the episode description, if you will. And again, 911, I Just Shot Someone. And it reads as this. It says, calls like this happen far too often, daily, as a matter of fact. 911 operators and dispatchers receive calls like this on a regular basis. Now, myself and a number of my friends that are out there who have served in a number of different positions with law enforcement agencies over the years, we ourselves have sat there right on the 911 operator's desk, dispatcher's desk, and have taken many calls like this ourselves, but probably not as many calls as some of the larger cities here in the United States. But geographically speaking, large cities like Chicago, Illinois, which is a city that restricts gun ownership and concealed carry to a large degree, receives hundreds of calls like this each and every year. You know, well, what I have to say about that is so much for gun control agenda that they do, right, Mayor Rahm Emanuel? I think you know who I'm talking about there. So what can you do about it? Well, you could, of course, cower in your own home. You can cower in your businesses or even out in public, like the sheeple politicians would like for you to do. Or you can stand your ground, protect yourselves and the rights to live in a real world without fear. So I ask you to join me tonight. What we're going to discuss is the 15 steps designed to get you on the other side of a defensive shooting event. Of course, we're going to try to do some call-ins here in a bit. I'll give you the cue when it's time for you to call in, and I'll give the number to call for you to call in by as well. If you would like to discuss anything on shooting-related events, self-defense, protecting yourself and your home, anything along that line that may have to do with the show itself. So I do want to talk about it. So how did we get here in the first place? And what can we do to survive a defensive shooting event? What can we do about that? Well, first and foremost, let's talk about our mind-body training, tactics, and, of course, our preparation. For our mind, and I'm going to read some of this just directly off of the article that I wrote, it says, begin by preparing your defensive and survival mindset. You need to prepare mentally. Now, I teach concealed carry classes here in Western North Carolina, as I have in a number of other states over the years. I've taught a number of different types of firearms training for both law enforcement and military for many years. And we're talking about preparing yourself mentally. Well, ask yourself this. How many of you, if you needed to protect yourself or protect others, how many of you could actually take a life protection of yourself or others? Think about that for a moment. How many of you could do that? Probably a lot of you could, but there are some who enter my classes, attend my classes, who, when they come in, they say, oh, You mean with this gun, I might have to defend myself. With this gun, I might have to shoot someone else. And so I try to help the first-time shooters, the first-time carriers of concealed carry, try to get into the framework and mindset of if you needed to, you could. And that's the kind of mindset that you need to be there. And you need to, of course, always prepare mentally for that to happen. When we're talking about our bodies, now, I'm not, you know, really, there's a lot of different people out there with, you know, Americans with Disabilities Act or other people who have a certain types of disabilities and like that. But, you know your strengths, you know your, maybe what your weaknesses might be, you know what your abilities are as well as maybe what your disabilities are as well. What I'm talking about here also is those who are pretty much physically fit to take care of themselves. But for any of us, we need to try to, up our game a little bit and try to stay as physically fit as our bodies will allow us to do. Some of you out there probably listening are quite young. Some are, you know, have a few years under their belts. Some of you are probably not in the best shape as you need to be. But I'm talking about things just as easy as you're trying to do grip strength and hand strength. For some who have difficulties with that, there's a number of different items that you can purchase out there, whether it's a stress ball or a spring action type of hand grips to help try to develop your hand strength. Reason for that and reason maybe for the forearm strength and arm strength is being able to, you know, if you're using a firearm, be able to hold that firearm, be able to manipulate that firearm or use that firearm or, you know, whether it's rack the slide on it or be able to even pull the trigger. I've found some people even have difficulties doing that. You need to be fit to be able to do that. And, you know, I'll talk about in choosing guns, and it'll be on another show that we have, is using the feel, felt, and found method of determining which is the right handgun for you to have. Let's talk about training with firearms, edge weapons, and self-defense. Even hands and foot, like taking some type of martial arts type classes. These are things that, you know, if you can't get to your gun, if you can't get to your knife, what can you do with your hands and feet and elbows and whatever other tools that you might have at your disposal? The class on talking about edge weapons, and I had a discussion this past week, and I'll do a class on that as well. But most all houses have some type of edged weapons that are available to them. It's one thing to be able to have one. It's another thing to be able to use one. So that should be a segment that we're going to further discuss as well. But you need to do training. Now, a couple of years ago, and I just posted it earlier today on the social media, a couple of years ago I did a class with three gentlemen. It was a defensive carry class, a defensive handgun class, rather. And this was like 2 years ago. And even as late as this week, this past Wednesday, when I was out teaching another private client's lessons, these three gentlemen still come out and go shoot with one another. This is a couple of years later. For some of you, talk about training. For some of you, you get your concealed carry permit. That may be the last time you pick up that gun, or you might do it once every, you know, once a month, maybe once every 3 months, once every couple of years. Well, that's not enough. You know, I can talk all day about, you know, how many of you carry your shooting bench with you everywhere that you go? Probably none of you. And so if we're always practicing, always shooting from the shooting bench, then you've missed the whole point of what concealed carry is, practicing how you carry. But let's talk about tactics for a moment. There is no such thing as a fair fight. I'm going to repeat that again. No such thing as a fair fight. Every method and every tactic available to you, you need to use to survive the threat. Now, what's the threat? It could be a number of different things. You could be out. You could be robbed out in public. You could be robbed getting into your car. You could be robbed going into a store. You could be assaulted in any of a number of places, not only in public, but also in your home. Maybe even in your businesses as well. And there's been countless incidents and occurrences that have taken place in respect to all of that. So you need to be able to survive the threat. You have to be able to prepare mentally, but you need to be able to survive that threat. And what about preparation? Well, we as general, American public overall, because I do have some people that listen to us from a number of other countries as well, Norway being one, Philippines being another. So we do have an international audience here, and I down. But let's talk about preparation. In order to prepare, you need to plan. You need to prepare by doing things, putting the mindsets together, preparing by, you know, what type of gun that you have purchased, what type of gun that you carry, what type of gun, where is it strategically located, safe from others who don't need to get a hold of your gun, you know, like children and like that. But how have you prepared that firearm just for such a purpose to being able to protect yourself? Do you carry it in your vehicle? Where do you carry it in your vehicle? Is it on your person or is it within armed reach of you? Do you open carry it, as in some states they have? So preparation, you know, combined with the other methods that I talked about earlier, helps you to overcome your attackers with a determined effort. So you need to prepare as often as you can. Now let's go to section two here, which is called under defensive gun usage, how can you survive a threat? What do you need to survive that threat? Well, if you're at home, engaging the threat, surviving the encounter, you need to harden your home defense with alarms, locks, and lights, and you need to use them. I listened to someone earlier this week. I spoke to someone on some property we were purchasing a while back, and they have these special security lights that are outside of their home. But because they come, you know, maybe a critter, some type of animal come across, maybe a car drives by or whatever, it goes on all the time. It sounds an alarm, sounds a little piezo type of alarm, something like that, a little ding-dong type of alarm, or the lights come on, something like that. And so it's irritating or annoying to them. Well, it's there for a purpose. Maybe you need to tweak the light or tweak the alarm, if you will, or the alert that you've got. Maybe you need to tweak it out a little bit. Maybe that it doesn't go across a particular beam or location. Maybe just tweak it out a little bit, and maybe that'll help you. But you got to use it. I know a lot of people who sit in their homes, and it's not like it was when I was a kid 20, 30 years ago. Well, okay, maybe longer than that. But when I was a kid many years ago, and you were able to leave your doors unlocked. You can't do that anymore. You know, locks only keep honest people honest, and I'll be honest about that. But what also happens is this. If you at least have it locked, maybe that's just enough alert for you. If someone broke lock, someone busted in through the door, instead of just casually opening the door and sneaking in behind you, which happens far too often, maybe if you've at least locked the door, maybe that's an early enough warning system for you to be able to, you know, disengage from the area, disengage from the attack, maybe get into a safe room, maybe have enough time to retrieve that firearm that might be in your house. You need to create that home defense plan. You need to know the plan, and you need to drill the plan. How many of you have a fire plan for your home? If you don't, I recommend that you should have that. But how many of you have that defensive home defense plan where if you something did happen, and I always say the wouldas, shouldas, the couldas, you know, the what ifs, what if this happened? What if that happened? How would I handle this? How would I handle it if they came in my back door or this window? What would I do if I'm sitting there watching TV at night in my lazy boy chair, three quarters of the way dozing off? What would happen if someone opened that door and, oh, by the way, and I had it unlocked, what would happen then? So you need to work those plans and drill those plans. If you have some type of safe room, you need to know how to gain access to it. Now, as I do a number of other things, and Tango 3 Global is one of the other groups that I have, I was speaking with a gentleman by the name of David Moses today. He has D. Moses Consulting, and he and I are looking at going into some type of agreement with one another in regards to things like safe rooms and things like perimeter protection technology, sound technology going on as far as, you know, protections around your home and your property or your businesses or maybe you know, maritime industry or offshore industry such as that. So there's a lot of things that that he does with his particular company, and you'll be hearing more about it soon because I plan on having him on my radio show coming up in the near future. But to get back to what we were talking about, do you have that go-to zone? Do you have a zone that is a safe room, as you would call it? Some of you may remember Jodie Foster in a movie years ago where she had a safe room in her house, and I think it was Forrest Whitaker or whomever it was, but he and a bunch of his Thuglian buddies broke into the home and you know, terrorized those people in that zone. But, you know, do you have a safe zone? Do you have a safe room to go to? And if you don't, maybe you can create one, or at least a go-to zone where you can disengage from a possible threat or an assault, and that you have certain things that's with you. But maybe your gun, it may be your cell phone, where you can call 911 at the time. And, you know, even with 911, and God bless all of our police, you know, it does take them a few minutes to get there because, you know, unless you've hired one to stand guard over you, be your bodyguard or something like that, they're not going to be everywhere at once. And so when seconds count and police are minutes away, and, you know, they try their very best, but they absolutely cannot be everywhere at one time. So you need to be able to do that. You need to be able to stand your ground if it's necessary and use the tactics that you've been trained with. Go get firearms training, go get edge weapons training, go get martial arts training is what I'm suggesting here. How many of you go to bed with your cell phones uncharged? Well, what if you needed it charged up? If your electric grid went down, something like that, you need your cell phone. But what if you needed to use the cell phone and your cord's in, you know, one room of your house, the other side of your house maybe, and you need to be able to charge it up so maybe you can call 911? If you're in a rural area, you know, those screams may go unanswered. Those yells may go unanswered. And if you just can't get onto the 911. Now, understand this, and even with those who still have the old, and I would say rotary dial phones, but, you know, I have been in a few homes that still have them, but most homes have a digital styled phone in their home, but it's a landline phone. It's connected to a line itself. Even if the grid went down, there is a certain amount of pulsating current that runs through the system, and many times it will work. Sometimes it won't, but many times it will work. So think about that as well if you have that. But if phone lines are cut from the outside, you may or may not be able to do that. If someone enters your residence, you need to take charge. You need to think. You need to react, and you need to control that situation. Well, how do you do that? Preparing is one thing. Being mentally prepared is one thing as well. Knowing your home, knowing how you would react, doing those what ifs, that's all important in trying to design how you would possibly react and control the situation. If you lose it, if you mentally lose it, then you're not going to be able to save yourself, probably not, and probably not be able to save others. You need to be in control of the situation. Everyone hyperventilates, everyone goes to that adrenaline dump and such as that. But if you're protecting yourself, if you're protecting your loved one, you're protecting your children, protecting your husband, wife, whomever, parents, whoever that's in your home, you need to be able to take charge. You need to be in control and react appropriately to that. Now, again, talking about certain things, you need to work that home defense plan. Do you rush or do you retreat? Do you go to your safe room? Do you do the 911? What do? You need to get that plan together. And what it needs to be is a default. It needs to be something. Now, I don't mean go and dial 911 every time you're doing this drill. You need to simulate that. I think the law enforcement, the dispatchers and operators and the responders would get kind of annoyed at that if you continue to do it. And it almost gets to a point where that might be a cry wolf situation in respect to that. No offense to the wolves out there. Well, Thugland type wolves, yeah, but no offense to the four-legged wolves that are out there. So, but you need to have some kind of plan put together. In some states, depending on where you're listening, you are required to retreat. You're not required. I mean, you don't have a duty to, stand your ground. You don't have a duty to retreat as well. So you need to, know what your state laws require of you also. If you're a threatened or attacked, you must engage the threat. If you're going to shoot, and I teach people this, and you can go to our website, tap3times.com or tap3x.com, and I teach a lot of classes. I teach people how to shoot and shoot very effectively. Whether it's moving targets or stationary targets or three-dimensional type targets or whatever it is, that's what we do. But if you're going to shoot, I suggest and recommend, as many agencies have done, and law enforcement agencies or civilian instructors have done, they're talking about shooting center mass. And if you shoot center mass, you have more of a targeting area to be able to shoot, but you need to shoot it effectively. I cringe or I laugh every time I think about it, and I'm teaching these concealed carry classes, and some states only require that you shoot maybe one round downrange just to see if you can shoot a gun. Others say, okay, well, you don't have to get to shoot at all. You have to sit here, listen to the concealed carry class, listen to the gun safety class, and then you go right in and get your certificate, and you fill out your paperwork for your permit, and you get a permit. You never have to shoot at all, or maybe you're limited in what you have to shoot. And then there are some states who say, okay, well, you get to shoot X amount of rounds downrange, but you only have to hit it this many times, which is far less than the rounds that you had to send downrange. So you own every round that you send downrange, number one. But if you miss the target, if you miss shooting center mass, you've got a problem on your hand because you're not stopping the threat. You need to be able to stop the threat. And sometimes one or two or three bullets, not like in Hollywood, one or two or three bullets are not going to stop the threat each and every time. If one does, so be it. Stop shooting. But it sometimes will take more than one bullet to send down range. So when you're walking around, you got your gun in your house and you got, a six shooter and you only leave five bullets in it because in case you drop that revolver, the gun won't go off. Or you leave a round out of the chamber and you're going to rack the round. I'm telling you, you're going to default to how you train. And if you don't train with a round in the chamber, that very first click that you're going to hear is you pulling that trigger on an empty chamber. And then, it's a life-changing event. It may be the end of your life. So be thinking about that. But again, shoot center mass. Continue to shoot until you have stopped the threat. If you need to reload and re-engage or reevaluate at that time to see if the threat is still there, then that's what you need to do. You shoot until you stop the threat. I'm not teaching or telling. I don't teach my people. I don't tell my people, hey, let's go out there and just shoot until you kill somebody. The kill word is not even in our vocabulary. It's shoot to stop the threat. You need to stay in your go-to zone, your safe room, if it is safe to remain there. If it's not safe to remain there, you may have to traverse, negotiate, get to another location, which is more safe for you. If, let's say, your home set on fire, that it's placed on fire, then it's not safe to stay in your safe room unless it's it's fire retardant and it's designed to withstand such threats as that as well. So think about it and then move on. But think about that in your drills. Think about that in your planning and in your preparation stage. I'm going to go to a break real quick and we'll be back in just a moment. This is Dan Meadows with the Tap Three Times Radio Show, and we will be right back at you in just a moment. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Tap Three Times Radio Show. This is Dan Meadows, your host for tonight's show. Tonight's show is on 911. I just shot someone. We got about 30 minutes left in our show, and this looks like it may be a two-parter as we're going along here. I do want to go into our next area, which is we just talked about, you know, protection in your home, defense in your home. Now let's talk about being out in public. What do you do? Well, you don't walk around and be all Tackleberry, like from the Police Academy movies and stuff like that, and walking around like Rambo or something along that line. But you need to be able to protect yourself out in public as well as in your home. If you're going to travel, you need to know what your course and your plan is, where you're going, who you're going to go see. Maybe leave that information with someone, you know, your family or your friends. Let them know what time you leave, what time you're going to get there, what time you're going to arrive, or what time you're going to go back. Maybe as you're going along, you know, you talk about, you know, whether it's texting, and don't do it while you're driving, but texting them, let them know that you made it. Texting them, let them know that you're on your way, that you're safe in your car, that you're traveling to and from. If you're going hiking, you know, you go to a particular area, you're going hiking. Well, if you're going hiking on a particular trail, but somehow or another you get there and that trail is closed down, let somebody else know that you change trails and you're going to go on, you know, trail B, trail C, whatever the name of that particular trail is. Let somebody know. Text them. Let somebody know. Mark it. Leave it in your car if you can, because some areas here, even in North Carolina, doesn't have great cell phone reception, and you may or may not be able to tweet or text or call out on that. So keep that in mind, you know, with your car. Leave that information at least for somebody to be able to find if something does in fact happen to you medically or otherwise. You need to harden your soft target defenses. Now, what is a soft target? Anybody want to talk about that? Soft target defenses are people. It's you. It's whether it's you, whether it's whom you're with. Even a soft target defenses around, you know, where you're at that particular time. You need to harden those up, and doing so, being more vigilant, is something to think about along those lines. If you're going to travel as often you can, and we talked about it many years ago, you know, take a buddy with you. You always use the buddy system. If you're going to go hunting, use the buddy system. If you go swimming, go boating, use the buddy system. At least there's two people there to be able to, you know, strength is in numbers in many cases. And if you're alone, you might be more susceptible to becoming a victim than if you are if there's two or more of you as well. So take a friend with you as often as you can. Everyone should be alert, responsive to the threats. You need to be vigilant. You need to be ever looking. That doesn't mean you're putting your head around 360 like an owl or something like that, but you're at least watching what's going on around you. You're acutely aware of what's going on around you as you can. You're looking around, you're listening, you're watching others. That's the key to being vigilant and not complacent. Like that. Wear clothing that creates an easy access to your firearm or other carry weapons, whether you're carrying, and I know many people, both men and women, carry knives with them. Well, do you carry the proper knife with you? Is it the right knife that's going to deploy easily? Or have you got to go into some pouch inside of your purse, inside of your bag, your backpack or whatever, to get to that knife? By then, you know, who knows what's going to have happened to you, but that you've gained ease of access to that particular point. I worked with a guy here on Wednesday about access to his handgun and how he carried it. He wore a vest mostly to conceal his gun, but the gaining of access and how he can do so safely, not reaching down, not putting your finger on the trigger as you pull the gun out, you know, causing maybe injury to yourself or something worse like that. So we talk about ease of access. Think about what you're wearing. Think about being able to gain access to the type of tools or weapons that you're carrying with you at that time, firearms as well. If possible, disengage from the threat, seek cover, and monitor the threat. If you can disengage from the threat, it's a good thing. If you got a gun, they got a gun, you're exchanging bullets back and forth to one another, eventually someone's going to get hit, you hope. Of course, I watch a lot of these Hollywood series, television series and stuff like that, and it's mind-boggling. I think they need to come to my firearms training classes. It's mind-boggling that no one gets hit in a lot of these with all the bullets to go down range. But it's not like that in real life. You know, don't be the Superman or Superwoman standing out there thinking just because you're shooting rounds towards your intended target, your attacker, that they're not shooting rounds at you. So disengaging, seeking cover, not concealment, there's a little bit difference in the two. Cover is going to hopefully deflect rounds that may be aimed at you. So keep that in mind as well. If your attacker is an imminent threat to you or to others, if you're armed, engage your attacker, again, by shooting center mass. We talked about home before. We'll talk about the same thing out in public. You need to shoot center mass. And you need to work on not just one round down range, but maybe a double tap or even a tap three times, as I call it, technique to be able to stop the threat. When you're talking about kinetic energy at you know, 1,100, 1,200 feet or so per second, and your target's only 3 to 10 feet away from you or 7 feet to 7 yards away, which many encounters happen, if they're that close, those bullets are going to hit very quickly. So keep that in mind, but think about this. Double tapping is probably going to be much better than just sending a single round down range. And just, oh, and here's one for the debate. Oh, just because I have a 45 caliber, that means it's going to stop it much quicker. That's not necessarily true. You need to be able to shoot. You need to be able to shoot effectively and on target and at key points and like that. You can shoot all you want to, and eventually they may stop, but you need to stop them much quicker than eventually. Continue to shoot your attacker until the threat has been stopped. I said that before. I'm saying it again now. You shoot until you stop the threat. That's what you're talking about. I didn't shoot to kill anyone. I shot till I stopped the threat. The threat against me, the threat against my family, the threat against my friends, the threat against disinterested or unknown third parties, as long as you know what the facts and circumstances are, if you are also protecting them as well. Reload and re-engage your threat again if necessary. Here's a thought for you. How many of you walk around with a concealed carry gun, one magazine, 7 or 8 rounds, 6 rounds, maybe 15 rounds? Of course, I had one student one time. He said, yeah, they carry those Stendos, you know, one of those 32, 33 round jobs. Well, that'd be kind of difficult to conceal maybe, but, at least you got extra rounds. But you should carry more rounds than just one magazine if you're carrying a semi-automatic. You should carry more bullets than Barney Fife does in his one pocket than just the one bullet you need for your revolver. You need more rounds just in case you need to reload, re-engage that threat, and stop that threat. You need to remain in a safe cover, again, something to hopefully deflect the rounds that may be fired at you, and stay there until it's safe to move, it's safe to come out of that. You know, don't be poking your head up like some whack-a-mole type thing just to see if that's happening. Be listening, hearing what's going on. Think about this. If you're shooting or if your attacker is shooting and you hear click, 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 that's probably a good sign that they are unloaded at the time. It may be a time for you to engage the target. May not be the safe time for you to do it. You and only you can evaluate that situation at that particular time. Now we're going to go into the third section, beyond the shooting. What's the immediate aftermath of a defensive gun usage encounter? Just beyond the threshold of danger lies the realization of what has just taken place. So what you need to do, if at all possible, you need to stay put, unless it's more dangerous to remain in place. But you should not approach the threat. Oh, well, you know, he's down. I think he's dead. I think he's no longer with us. he may be faking. He or she may be faking. They may be faking injury just to get you out into the open and maybe to re-engage you. So it is suggested not to approach the threat if at all possible. You need to keep a visual of the suspect if you can, in case they are only wounded. As I mentioned ago, sometimes they may fake the injury, or they may have just stunned them long enough, or knocked the wind out of them, or you know, created such a shock at the time, or pain, or what I would call a shock and awe, you know, at that time, that, you know, by the time you try to move closer to them, they may have been able to regain some of their thoughts or faculties and might engage you. You might be in too close proximity to them that that they take you down and maybe disarm you or seriously injure you, even kill you. So you need to be very, very aware of that. If your suspect is wounded, keep your firearm aimed at the intruder. Only engage them if they threaten to harm you or others, or if they continue their attack. Now, you keep your gun on them if you do have one. You keep your gun on them, but keep your finger off the trigger. You don't want some emotions kicking in. You don't want some startle response to take place and your finger engage that trigger and you shoot them again. Now you say, well, okay, well, you know, they attacked me. They should be shot. Well, that's not necessarily true. You know, you can be charged with excessive force if you had to shoot someone, but you shot them more times than what's necessary stop that threat. So give that some thought about it as well. You need to also ensure that you have of ammunition loaded into your firearm. Reload is necessary. However, do not traverse or move to another area to gather more ammo if doing so will place you in further danger. For many law enforcement agencies and like that, a lot of times they'll say, well, for some, not all law enforcement officers or agencies do this. Some will say, okay, if you're going to move from point A to point B, go ahead and take out the partially loaded magazine, hold on to it, don't drop it, because you might need that ammo later on, but put in a full mag before you go from point A to point B. For some schools of thought, that's the way it is, and I'm not going to say one way or the other if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but if you're not accustomed to reloading on the run or on the fly, then you may want to load up if you have to engage them in mid-flight, in mid-positioning to go from point A to point B. Think about that as well. I'm going to take a real quick break one more time, and we're coming into the last 15 minutes or so, and then we'll finish out the show with a few more thoughts as well. And welcome back to the Tap Three Times radio show. Dan Meadows coming to you live from Western North Carolina near the Blue Ridge Parkway. You're on the Tap Three Times radio show, everyone. 911, I just shot someone is what we're talking about this evening. Now, right before the break, we talked about, at home, protecting yourself in the home. We talked about defensive gun usage encounters in your home, what to do if you're out in public, what to do in the immediate aftermath of a defensive gun usage encounter. And you can go into greater, much greater detail than maybe I've covered this evening. And we'll do that maybe on another upcoming show. But right now, let's go into the next segment, which would be Section 4. It's calling of 911 reporting the incident. Now, everyone has heard this before. You know, 911, I just shot someone. 911, you know, please come. There's been someone injured. There's been someone shot. You know, a lot of different things you may have heard, you know, whether it's on, you know, whether it was live PD or cops or, you know, listening to some of the dispatch calls for 911 to come in. But think about, you know, what to say and what not to say. So in respect to this, it says calling for help has purpose and meaning, but how you report it may determine your fate. So some people would say, you know, someone's been shot and then hang up. Other people would say you need to send the police to so-and-so, such and such location. There's been gunfire, there's been shooting, whatever. You need to make a determination what you want to do. And if you have lawyers whom you've dealt with before, have a lawyer is on retainer or something like that, you may want to consult them and based on what they have to say. And not all lawyers are trial lawyers. Not all lawyers deal with, you know, criminal type cases. I don't mean using a tax attorney or something like that to give you some kind of recommendations or something, unless they themselves have been involved in that. But when you think about it, if you're going to call 911, if you're not already on the phone with them, do not wait. You need to call them immediately. You need to tell them that you just, here's where the debate goes. Do you tell them that you shot an intruder, an attacker? Do you tell them that that's what you just done? Do you tell them anything at all? Do you tell them you just need to send somebody? That's what you have to determine what you want to do, because you have to remember those 911 calls are being taped and they are being monitored at that time. They are recorded. They are used in court, playback in court. So you need to be thinking about what you're going to say and have it planned out. That should be part of your planning scenario about if something happens, this is what I'm going to do. But if you did say anything, you need to let them know. You know, everyone has a fear factor and a threat threshold. Was that fear factor met? Was that threat threshold met? Did you fear for your life? You know, look up your particular state, your particular country, your particular area's reasoning for justified self-defense, and you need to try to maintain and be within the law in respect to what's going on for that. You do need to tell the 911 operator who you are. You need to let them know where you are. Just because, you know, you have a cell phone and you live at 123 Mockingbird Lane or something like that doesn't mean, or 1313 Mockingbird Lane from the old TV series that I used to watch 100 years ago. You need to let them know where you're at, because your cell phone is not necessarily going to tell them where you're at. They may be able to do a locator and triangulate it later on. But if you need police, you don't need for them to try to figure out where you're at. You need them to come directly where you're at. So you need to let them, you know, let them know where you are, where you're located at, and who's with you. You need to give the 911 operator your description, a description of the attacker, what you look like. Because if you're there and you're holding a gun and the police drive up at that particular moment, the sheriff's office, police, state police, whoever that it is, drives up at that moment, you don't want them to mistake you for being the suspect. So you need to try to give some type of description about you. If your attacker was armed, describe the type of weapon, if you can, to them, what they and what you had observed. You need to let them know that you are still armed, and that once the police has arrived, that you will either set your gun down or reholster it or put it in a safe place that would not be, you know, overtaken by maybe the attacker, your intruder, whomever, at that particular time. You need to set it down. Don't be standing there waving a gun around when the police arrive in respect to that. They may think that you are the threat, and that you don't want that to happen. If requested by 911, many times they'll ask you to stay on the line. describe what's going on, because the more information that a 911 operator has, the more information that they can relay to the officers in the field, the responding officers, about what's going on. If the suspect is down, if the suspect is still moving, if the suspect is still has a firearm, if the suspect is still shooting at you, these are all things that the law enforcement responding officers, the first responders, need to know, that that dispatcher needs to know at that time. You are the eyes on the ground. You are there in the situation that's taking place. You are the best person to be able to communicate that particular bits and pieces of information to the dispatcher, who in turn relays that to the officers who are responding. And you want them to get it right. You want them to get that information right ever before they arrive. Give no additional statements, admissions, comments, or even apologize at this time. You are being recorded. You may want to plead the fifth at that time. You may want to, your right to remain silent at that particular time. But you need to give some kind of information about who you are, what's going on, where you're at, what you're dressed like, what kind of car you have. These kind of things will help you out in the long run, because the more information that you have, the quicker they can get to you, and maybe you'll be removed from that situation. And just because that suspect is down doesn't mean there's not more around. Doesn't mean there are more who may not have seen or observed what had taken place or witnessed what had taken place. And now, because you shot their buddy, you shot someone that's down in the street, and you hear about all the stuff going on the news nowadays, whether it's one particular, type of thugland and everyone wants to bring race into it, stuff like that. And that's unfortunate that happens. But you don't want the friends of the suspect, the thugland, the attacker, the intruder, whomever, you don't want them showing up and coming after you. So again, the more information you communicate, the better for yourself. Now, waiting for the police to arrive and securing the scene. I've got just about 8 or 9 minutes left. Actually, I got less than that. I got about 7 minutes left. So I'm going to finish this, maybe a little bit more of the segment, talk about our next show, which I think we'll go into part two of the show, and then do one of the other shows later on. If you're waiting for the police, the wailing of sirens sounds so close, yet they seem like it takes forever for them to arrive. And many times that's true. I was a law enforcement officer for years. It was great to hear the sirens, but it sounded like it seemed like it took them forever to get there. Remain on the line with the 911 call if you're instructed to do so by your 911 operator. Just like law enforcement officers do, and if it's safe to do so, you need to secure the scene the best of your ability and safety. Don't move the gun around or don't move the weapon around to the attacker unless you feel that someone's going to maybe come and pick it up and take it. There will be DNA evidence on that particular gun from the suspect that can be found forensically. Don't move any evidence. Don't move the suspect's body. Keep the integrity of the shooting scene intact, if at all possible that you can do that and do so safely. Remain vigilant for others who may be the associates of the attacker. Kind of mentioned that earlier. Watch out for crowds for them. They may be the friends of the acquaintances of the suspect. You have just engaged in urban combat and you've had to shoot them. Watch out for onlookers or associates who might attempt to remove the evidence. Again, knife, gun, weapon, whatever, from the scene of the shooting event. Identify them if required. If there's people there and you may not have been able to safely gather something up, get the best description as you can of that person who may have picked up some of that evidence as you go along. If evidence is taken, describe it, its location, and best ability to law enforcement officers. You need to advise the 911 operator of your location, how you're dressed. I kind of touched base with that earlier. On their arrival, you need to absolutely place your weapon, your firearm away in a recoverable place. And you're probably very much likely going to have to relinquish that particular gun, the ammo that's in it, like that. Don't unload the gun. Leave it as it was. If it's a magazine in it, leave it. If it's rounds in a cylinder of a revolver, leave it. Don't take it out. Don't do it that way. Don't unload it or anything. Put it in a safe place, but don't be holding it. You need to comply with the officer's instructions. You may even be handcuffed at the time. You need to try to go along with that the best you can. If it's time for you to remain silent, remain silent. But you do absolutely as much as you can, as best as you can. You need to remain calm. You need to direct the officers to the offenders, the attacker's weapons, or any evidence that that you may have seen that was in the area or where it may have been taken from. You need to identify the suspect or suspects if it's not already known to the officers who have attacked you. Give a description if they were wounded and get away. Best description, because hopefully they'll end up in an emergency room somewhere. Of course, they may be found on the side of the road and have deceased when they're found. But anyway, those are kind of things to think about also. I think what we're going to do this next time, we're going to go into part two of this. I'm about halfway through the discussions of the 15 points that I was talking about. I think we'll pick it up on one of the other times as well. So I do want to say, you know, I appreciate everyone attending this particular radio show. You can go to blogtalkradio.com/ Tap Three Times or Tap 3X Radio Show. You can listen to many of our shows that we've already done. We've had a couple of test shows that we were just testing the audio out, but this would be the fifth show that we're doing. We've got some other shows that are coming up as well, a lot of different types of shows coming up, but this is the fifth episode that we've done thus far. You can always go back on podcasts, and you can listen to them anytime. You can listen to this one as well. Unfortunately, we're unable to get to any of the callers this evening. Of course, I didn't give the telephone number out. So we'll try to fit that into our busy radio show of next time. So I do want to thank each and every one of you attending, listening to the show. Please, if you got questions and such like that, be sure to you know, try to get them together. We'll put you on the show next time. You can also find us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ Tap3X or Tap3Times. You can go to our website at tap3times.com or tap3x.com, and you can listen and read a lot of our stories, a lot of what's coming up. I just got the 90-second cue that we're going to be going out. So go to our website on there. We'd appreciate that. Try to pick up that this article, 911, I Just Shot Someone by Dan Meadows, and that'll give you an outline of what we're going to be talking about next time. We appreciate every one of you. God bless. Stay safe. Stay armed. Be careful and always survive the threat. And we will talk to you next time.